Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley here.
Hello, welcome to My Opening Line.
Chemda's here as well, and we talk to comedians and actors about their first times on stage, their first times on set, and quite frankly, I think it's been going splendidly.
Oh, so embarrassing. We love it.
Make sure you're subscribed, okay? MyOpeningLine.com. Also, download the app at Laughable.com, and not only can you subscribe to a podcast like you would on any app, you can also subscribe to the person.
So even if the person that you love when they're on podcasts, doesn't have their own podcast, you can follow that person. And when they guest on other people's podcasts, it'll be in your time feed. So Laughable.com, get the app. If you love podcasts, you need to have Laughable in your app.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest. We have known this gentleman for easily over a decade. We did
Cloud. I think I've known you for two decades.
Two decades.
Yeah.
Two decades. Mm-hmm. That's easily over, I would say. Right? And now, yeah, we would do clown parties together and magic shows, this kind of thing. And that he, all the jobs he had, they'd go, Keith, you're going to be Elmo. Jeff, you're going to be the most handsome man alive. And I'm like, is that in the character? And they go, look at his head. And I'm like, all right, that's a character, I suppose. Now he's in Blackish, Thundermans, you could see him in season after season. A big how you doing, ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Meacham.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
We just did a Keith and the Girl show. You were amazing. Thank it was you. Good to reminisce. We haven't seen this guy in over a decade. Well over
20
a decade.
Years.
No, but we haven't seen each other in a decade.
Oh, right. Kept
it together, Keith.
Yeah, sorry.
Seriously, timelines are important.
All these numbers. I didn't get into this business for numbers. No,
how many decades?
Right. Now, the very first acting job you ever had was in New York City.
Yes.
On a soap opera.
On a soap opera.
And I've heard...
That's how handsome you are.
Yeah, right.
Maybe, you know, however you see soap operas, it's amazing how fast they film.
Yeah.
How they're one take only.
Yeah.
And sometimes you watch these and you think, do two takes.
Yeah, give me another.
They go, no, we're the porn of normal TV.
What were you saying was just a comparison of shooting?
Well, I mean, so to go on a soap, again, my first job was in 2001. It was on All My Children that we used to do, you know, out of the colleges, you would do these like leagues or performances once you graduated from these theater schools. And the casting directors from all the soaps would sweep people up because they had so much turnover for guest casts or co-stars or small roles or something called under fives.
Is it kind of like the Law and Order?
But on soap. So again, a Law and Order, every episode has multiple guest casts in it, but that takes a week to 2 weeks to shoot, maybe even longer depending on the episode. But I would say the standard episode of like a Law and Order and ER, whatever, probably takes somewhere, give or take, around 10 days. I'm making that number sort of up, but it's about right. A soap shoots a whole episode, a 1 hour episode in a day, sometimes less than a day.
That's half a movie.
Yeah.
It's more than half a movie because a lot of movies are just 90 minutes.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, with commercials and everything, it's 40 plus minutes of TV that these actors put out every day. So I was just fascinated. And again,
does anybody in this country work harder?
As actors?
As anything.
I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, yeah.
All right, there's a lot of jobs.
Yeah. I'm blown away by what those people do.
That's so interesting because they get so much shit for being bad actors.
Exactly.
But I don't know that I've ever done the math of they only get one time to do their lines.
One time to do their lines. They speak in exposition, which is not normal in any way, shape, or form, because I believe the understanding, the idea is that it's the over, you know, it's an older crowd that watches the show, so they have to continue to repeat what's going on in the plot.
For example, John, as my only son.
Yes.
Yeah, I know, Dan. Yeah. You don't got to keep saying
when that. I left the house 4 years ago with pancreatic cancer and moved to Indonesia, you know, like no one talks like that. And so they have to on those shows. So yeah,
they have to hold it for the break. Like the end of the scene is always them, you know, kind of smelling a fart for a while.
Yep. Right.
And then they cut to a different scene. I always think about how the actor has to feel while they're staring at each other because they need an extra 5 seconds before they cut.
Yep.
So weird.
Yep. I mean, you got to think the reason why soaps can stay alive as long as they do too is because it's a lower budget situation. So it's not like their sets are great. You know, they're all done in sound stages. They're pumping the scenes along. So yeah, man, it's not all the actors' fault. There's been plenty of fantastic actors that have come through soaps, like have been series ready. And if you go back and watch them, not good. Mm. Like, it's not good at all. It's a fascinating world, the soap world.
Did you have to try out, or did they scoop you up?
They scooped me up because a lot of, they would cast us as these characters called under fives, which means you had under five lines, which was a way that they could pay you less money. It's always a payment scale in the business. If you had to speak over five lines, you were called a day player, and they paid you more. So I
always find it funny if you ever watch like TV shows, there's sometimes two characters come on the scene and only one of them talks.
Yep.
And the other one, and you know, you don't really notice until you notice. And the other one, I start feeling bad for them because they have to act with their head nods and they have to act like they're also part of the scene and talking, but they can't get paid, so they don't have any lines.
And they're not allowed to talk because then you would have to pay them. So those people are called featured extras in that situation. This is all real, man. It's insane business. So if you and I are in a scene together, Keith, and you're the featured extra, I'm the actor talking. If I look at you and I'm like, right, Keith? And you go, right. Nope. They'll be like, cut. Can't have him say right, because then we got to pay him. So they can't, they have to pay you. You're on a different scale.
So what do you remember? And this was a while ago, how much a five and under would get paid?
Yes. It was called an under five. Get your shit together.
Oh my God. I'm such a New Yorker. What am I doing in Hollywood?
It was, goes, hi, I'm here for the five or
I'm the five and 10.
You're talking about my weight, right?
It was somewhere in the $300 range, it was, I know back then, I mean, again, this is 2001. So that was where, at least when I first got my first job. So can't have been more than $300. That's before taxes, before you gave 10%. And the unions back then, when you'd get the job, and this is with any of the unions, but SAG and AFTRA, they would, every actor has this story of where you would go to set and there would be a rep from the union that'd be like, hi, we just need you to sign that check over because you owe us money, because you, they would not let you work because it's a union job. Oof. So you'd sit there as the actor, be like, oh, cool. I'm just going to, there you go. So you'd end up basically doing it for free because you owed the union like $2,000 or whatever.
Right, because once they let you in the union, you owe dues.
Yeah, or your initiation fee is the biggest thing. That's the biggest deal, right? SAG finally turned it around, but for years, SAG was like, so, but when I joined, it was like $2,500. For kids recently, it was like $3,000, and they make you pay up front. Think about that shit. Think about
it. So you can't start working until you find $3,000.
So you find $3,000, but you get the job, but the job doesn't even pay $3,000. Oof. So you got to, like, stuff like that. So yeah, that was any actor has that story of like the first time they had to write their check over and just be like, yeah, sure.
I love how they could pay a rep to go get your check. That's interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I remember it was about that much money, and it was, I was so excited and nervous. I got to go to hair and makeup, and makeup on soaps is like a big deal because you've got to look like you're a plastic doll and getting that stuff done.
Picture the call sheet where, you know, them trying to hire anybody. It's like, what did you play? EMT worker?
EMT number two.
So, you know, it says EMT worker number two, handsome. end of qualifications.
The best part.
You know what people look like on soap operas? If you ever watch wrestling, everybody,
Keith could really relate it to himself all the time.
Everybody looks like a wrestler.
Yeah.
Like whether it's a doctor running out or a lawyer has to take care of something last minute, they're all failed wrestlers.
Yeah. A Philip Seymour Hoffman type's not popping out of the woodwork as the bartender anytime soon. Yeah, they swept us up quickly.
R.I.P.
Yeah. Oh, R.I.P. That's right. God, I forgot. So yeah, the first day I remember doing that, and this was my big memory about this first one. So it was me, and actually it was a friend of mine from college. We got cast as EMT number one and two, and this is totally real. Our first scene is standing over this girl who had been shot in the head, right? She's a series regular on the show that had been shot in the head.
She's about to get amnesia.
Yep.
Best lines.
Something's going to happen. Yep. She's been shot in the head.
Her twin sister's going to come out.
You are naming it all.
But
this is what it's like to be on a soap. We had no idea. And
you get shot in the head on a soap, you might get more lines.
Right.
You get two characters.
Right. While you're in a coma, your character does so much.
Yep. It's so true. And she, I do remember my line was something like, her pulse, I remember something about her pulse is threading. That's all I remember. Pulse is threading. I wish I could remember more, but yeah. This, I mean, it was a big deal. It was my first line on television. I thought I had made it.
Now, you know, now you have this new career.
Yeah.
Very exciting. And then do you go back to a kid's party?
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure.
They were paying the same amount without
the same amount. I was making way more doing kids' parties. Way more. And I remember we asked the girl, we were standing over her and waiting for our scene to start. And he said, hey, do you have a, oh my God, so you're going off the show? Like, what's happening? And she literally gave us that look. She was like, no. And we found out later that her character was going to go to heaven. Was going to have a storyline in heaven and her while her evil twin was taking her place.
Are you fucking so she ended me? Up,
no, she had two storylines at that time. Herself was in heaven dealing with heaven while her evil twin, yeah, dealing with the shit that happens in heaven. And we were like, what?
Well, I really did call it. That's yeah. so funny. Yeah. Yeah, as long as like you fell into a ditch, oh, now you've got three new characters for yourself.
And we did it a lot. And my buddy froze and didn't say his line and they had to do it again. They never called him again, but I just said my lines and would come in every so often. I did that for like 3 years on that show.
Were you always the EMT guy?
Always EMT, number one or number two.
They just always needed to one
it
and
was
two.
Always EMT, number one or
in
two.
In the whole town?
Always.
Oh my God. Did your friend cry after?
I don't remember. I remember we were.
He was the only one who needed to do a second take.
Had to do a second take, and that's just like out of the. You can't.
That's sacrilege.
You can't waste their time. They told someone told me. I mean, I did soaps for years of like I did a recurring on Guiding Light, and I asked questions all the time. I heard one of their tricks is to swear if they want to do the take again. Right. So let's say they're messing up, and they're just like, no, Susan, fuck. You'd have to swear to stop the take because no matter what, they would keep going if you were like, you know, Susan, and they would keep it, you know, if they're like, we got to.
In the future, you got to start throwing out the N-word. You're like, I'm sorry, by the way, that's not the real me back then.
Yeah, I just got really upset.
Kendra, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to think, where's this coming from? I'm just thinking of a friend of mine, and I wish more people said this. I know that's what counts as a good friend when they let you know, hey, you have bad breath. Hey, you're not brushing correctly.
Oh, that's the worst, though. Like, I feel like you kind of feel it in your mouth, but still.
Well, the truth is, most of us are brushing our teeth wrong, not for long enough, and forget to change our brush on time. That's because most brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks rather than better brushing, but not Quip. So, what makes Quip so different?
That I have it.
Well, for starters, Quip, Quip, is an electric toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes while still packing just the right amount of vibrations to help clean your teeth. Quip's built-in timer helps you clean for the dentist recommended 2 minutes and guiding pulses that remind you when you switch sides. They're absolutely right. I understood you had to sing like happy birthday to your brush, and I'm making a mess. I'm spitting all over. How am I going to be singing and brushing my teeth?
I do. I try to. I'm just like, that's got to be a minute. But I got to say, after I started using this toothbrush, I was like, oh man, yeah. I was mistaken about how long 2 minutes are to brush your teeth.
Next, Quip's subscription plans are for your health, not just convenience. Okay? They deliver new brush heads on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide.
That's actually really the crazy part because, I don't switch my toothbrushes until it falls on the ground and I step on it. Uh-huh. And B, I have to go to the store and then those toothbrush heads cost a lot, never mind that the actual thing costs a lot. So this was a big solution for me.
Quip also comes with a mount that suctions right to your mirror and unsticks to use as a cover for hygienic travel whenever you take your teeth, which is most always. And finally, everyone loves Quip. They were on Oprah's O list, named one of Time's best inventions, and is the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association.
You know what that means? That it could be that at some point, Oprah said, you get a Quip. You get a Quip.
Plus, they're backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists. And hundreds of thousands of happy brushers use Quip every day. Quip starts at just $25. And if you get, so listen to this, ready?
Okay.
Go to getquip.com/MOL for my opening line. You'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. I'll say that again.
This is insane. That's an electric toothbrush for what? It sounds like $25.
That's your first refill pack free.
Whoa.
Getquip.com/MOL. getquip.com/MOL.
I did on Guiding Light. I played three different characters over the course of years because by the end, the casting director was such a good guy. He would just hire the same actors because he trusted them. So, like, I was a recurring on that show as Wayne, the law student was my character. And then, like, a few years later, he called me. He's like, hey, do you mind coming on as this, what was I? I was like a bellhop at a hotel.
And, so prolific.
Yeah. And the actor asked me what my last name was. And I was like, it's Meacham. And he's like, cool. And then we started seeing, he's like, Mr. Meacham. And I was like, he used my real last name. And
that's
then
fun.
And then my last role on Guiding Light, when I walked on set, I barely read my lines. Like, I just read through what my character was. Because, oh, this is back in the day when you wouldn't get it by email. You'd have to get it by carrier. Mm-hmm. It would drop it off and you'd have to sit there and like go through 100 pages. And when I showed up on set, the actors were looking at me. And this is exactly the moment I went, am I supposed to be a woman? And they went, mm-hmm. And it was because they were just so lazy or whatever was going on. They didn't even pay attention anymore that they just cast me as a woman and didn't know that. The journalist was supposed to be female and they had just said, she's going to be here any minute now. And so then I show up. So the actor who's these guys, by the way, again, we make fun of soap actors. They are amazing at what they do. Like they just will get through a scene, memorize it in that moment and then just do it. And he was like, oh, no, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And we just walked on. He's like, sorry, you know, with a name like Pat, you know, or something like that. And I was like, yeah, I get that all the time. And that was it.
They had already filmed things.
Yeah, they're not going to refilm it. No, absolutely not. You have to film 100 pages that day or whatever.
Wow.
So soaps, you get my credit. Same with QVC, which I worked on for years. You know,
what?
We make fun of, I know, you make fun of those shows.
How did we miss this part of your career?
I did anything to make money, just shy of.
How'd I miss you on Guiding Light and QVC?
How did you, come on, Keith? What do you do at 3 a.m.? I know what you're doing.
What'd you do on QVC?
So I used to work for, while I used to do kids' parties, I'll make this quick. I would meet like John Domenico, who used to do characters all the time. I was like, hey, man, you got a great voice for doing corporate work. And I was like, corporate work? What's that? And he's like, dude, companies will hire you to sell
you
their...
You get the fuck out of here and work at a restaurant.
Yes. You can go get a real job is what corporate work is. He'd be like, dude, companies will hire you to sell their products. You know, their management, their sales team is not as good as actors. So they'll hire you to go to trade shows, national sales meetings, and be the spokesman for a product or something like that. So John started getting me work, blah, blah, blah.
God, the salespeople. I would be so not upset about it, but I'd be insulted because it's like, I know this product so well.
Totally. But what you would do is at a trade show, you would bring, your job is to drive traffic, bring in the people at the trade show and then be like, hey, let me introduce you to Hemda. Hemda knows everything about the S950 or whatever. And then you would be able to suck them in. So we were just those kind of people. So I got those jobs, started getting them. And then someone said, hey, you know, oh no, my friend who had an agent out of Tampa, Florida called C-Stars Talent Agency was like, you should meet Amy out of C-Stars. She casts people to like make money. And there was this world that actors make money in that people don't talk about. For instance, my wife became a foot model, like foot modeling, because she had a perfect 7. So she would go to these events and just wear shoes and get paid $1,000 a day. And we did.
So her foot didn't even, she could have had a rash on her foot, but she'd be fine.
Well, she had pretty feet, but she was also a perfect 7. And yeah, she had to go to an audition to show off her feet to get that job, to go to Vegas and stand in shoes all day.
How many people with fetishes work for that company?
Oh, man. And so I got an audition one day. She called me and it's like, oh, the Fisher or Mattel hires actors to do their huge toy fairs. And back in the day, they used to do these huge events. And so, yeah, so I would. Oh, yeah. So then I started doing the shows for I can't even remember the companies anymore. QVC. Well, Fisher Price and Mattel loved me and Christy, my wife, and they said, hey, will you guys go to QVC in Pennsylvania and sell our products for us? Because on those shows, you have the host and an expert, and we're the experts. So we would fly and do
so
the products.
You would have to be the expert.
Yeah, but what I just had to learn the product, yeah. And so instead of the marketing team going, who's not camera, you know, might be camera shy or something like that, everybody, do yourself a favor. Go to YouTube and type in QVC bloopers. Try to remember this. QVC and the Home Shopping Network are always live. Always live. 24 hours. The only day they don't work is Christmas Day. So everything that happens on that show is live. QVC bloopers, it's the best time
of
your life.
Are you in it?
No, of course not. No, but like we're talking about like people passing out. People pass out all the time on camera. Yeah. That's why you hire actors, because they don't know. They go on camera. They're the expert of their little new product. And next thing you know, there's lights and cameras and their knees lock up. There are so many people passing out.
No.
There's this woman that used to sell Christmas sweaters and she's racist. It's the best. She just says the dumbest racist shit. And they've got things of her. Specifically, remember one of them is like, the host is like, oh, so with the Christmas sweaters, do you also put on maybe stuff for Hanukkah? And she's like, could you imagine? And went off on thinking, you're like, It's live. They don't know what to do. So you can't. It's being watched that moment. She did this whole riff on, like, you know, the thing. And she couldn't remember. I think there's a thing where she can't remember the name. She's like, the candles, and it's too big. And you're like, oh, here we go. Here we go. You know, like stuff like that. Yeah. So
how did you do? What, it, like, what'd were you sell? Nervous about it? Because it's live?
Toys.
Toys, always toys. And they are such a business. When you had to, you have to go to a class, back at least when we started doing, you had to actually go to a workshop to be one of the experts. Like, you had to learn their model. They're amazing. You guys, so you wear an earpiece, the line producers, everything. It is capitalism at its best and worst. Like, if you and I are selling a product and you say to me, you know, it also funds children in Africa, every $5 you know, from the sale does that. And he'll see in real time the spike of sales will happen. So you hear in your earpiece, keep talking about that. And that's the line producer. Like, so then the host will immediately riff on that, being like, tell me more about the African children and what happens there. Oh yeah, well, blah, blah, blah. Because he'll see the spike in sales. Or if you and I are if I'm pushing the car, if I'm selling a toy car and I pull it back and it zips forward and he catches it and he sees a spike. Do that again, Jeff. And so I'm hearing that in my ear. So yeah, let me see the, like, they are ninjas for money. Everything, it's cut, and then you go off stage because it's only like 7 minutes and you see the color coded. How much money did I make? So I got paid whatever I got paid. It didn't matter. I didn't work. I had no stake in that company. Christy and I would call each other and our emotional level would be based on how much we sold that day. Like, I'd call and be like, wow, you know, how was it last night? I don't fucking know. I only sold like $5,000 worth of whatever, you know, like, it didn't matter to me. Wow. It's a mega company, but you would just, that's money. It's money, money, money.
What, do you remember what kind of money you would make on a show like that?
They would pay me $750 plus airfare, flights, and food.
And how long were you on air for?
7 minutes.
Well, for real?
Yeah. Yeah. You got a 7 minute slot. I believe it was 7 minutes. Yeah. Unless, like, one time Christy and I went and did the Mattel hour or something like that, where we sold toys for an hour, but always 7 minutes. Wow. By the way, now that it's all over and I'll never work that job again, they wasted so much money. They flew us from California to Pennsylvania to do that. So we'd have to, the cost of the flight, the two of us, because they love the idea that a couple could just bang off of each other and be like, all right, well, I'll go instead of you. But they could have hired any actor on the East Coast.
I think it's like Pablo Escobar, where he couldn't get rid of his money fast enough. It's like, I don't know. Fly him around the world and then here.
Do whatever you want with him. Do whatever.
We stayed too much.
We stayed in the same hotel. It was off in the middle of the night because that's when grandma's, you know, the insomnia kicks in and like the 16 over crowd. So sell the kids' toys.
That's terrible.
Everything. Yeah. The time that you sell food compared to the time that you sell toys compared to the time that you sell jewelry is all formulaically perfect.
It's funny because it's not like they hide it, you know, like you can be talking about it. It's not like we can't find this out, but you can be that blatant about it. And still, you know, we'll be like, the car moved because you let it go.
Yep.
Let's buy that.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. They told us one time that there was, I asked about different hosts that have different qualities. One host specifically sells food all the time because he has a great yum yum face is what they called it. Because his yum yum face was so good.
When he says yum yum or
when
just
he takes
in general?
A bite of a food and goes, he was so good at it. They kept seeing an increase in his time that he did. They were like, okay, let's have John continue to.
Holy, I mean, love this.
I was blown away. They said a woman once tried to return her television because the QVC symbol had been frozen into her television because she just left it on all day.
Oh my God.
And they tried to return the TV to QVC.
Yep. She tried to return it because their return policy is so good.
That's amazing. I know. Yeah, because who's returning anything?
Yeah, a lot of jobs. I did.
Wow.
I did. My whole MO as an actor was I never want to lift a fork for anybody. Like, I tried to make up this whole, like, I don't know. I was like, I'm never going to be a waiter. Yet I did more humiliating jobs instead of being a waiter, just so I never had to be a waiter.
So with all of this, yeah, you had a lot of experience. And I think, you know, it sounds like the crazy experience helps you kind of level off and not get as nervous, because what's going to happen now?
I got a lot of humility and I was able to learn how to deal with nerves a lot because of jobs like that.
So were you at all nervous the first day on set with Black-ish? Because that, it seems like that's next leveling your
absolutely
career.
Absolutely. And I knew something was special was going to happen with this. I could feel it. I was very lucky, and luck plays a huge part in this business. And
why, how did you get this part? Were just racist walking down the street.
I was just, and man, they were like, nothing gets whiter than that guy.
He just keeps pointing. He's in Harlem and he keeps pointing to things. Don't understand it.
Don't know what that
don't
is.
Get it.
What's Magic Johnson? Yeah, they just didn't know. I was, I booked the role. I know that I booked the role. One of the things was there was a line, there was very few lines that they gave in the audition, and it was, what's up, Driggity Dre? was the line, and it said in parentheses, it's slow-mo. And my understanding from what I was told from casting is that every actor did it just regular, being like, what's up, Triggity Trey? Like, tried to do things like that. And I went in and did it in real slow motion. I went, what's up, Triggity Trey? Like, I didn't, meaning they knew in post it's going to be made into slow-mo. You don't do it for real slow-mo. Ah. But I was the only actor that went in and like did like a mime thing where I was like, and they thought that was hilarious. So when I got on set, I almost believe that had my scenes been reverse, my career might have gone differently. I really mean that. Meaning,
what do you mean?
If my first scene in the show is with Anthony, where I stop him, I say, we have my biggest scene in the pilot. And had that been day one where I had to hit my mark and do a scene with Anthony and say all these lines, I'm sure I would have been very, very, very nervous and just, you know, yeah, this, you feel the gravity of like what might your career might be, you know, and that's
or not be. Yeah.
Instead, they had this sequence in the pilot where Dre's character says, even at work, you can feel the difference between what the black people at work get fed compared to the white people, meaning we're at a banquet table. And so in his mind, he saw himself eating like these like raisins. And meanwhile, my character, he would shoot over and see my character eating something like a better thing. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. All I remember is my character points to something and says like, so good. And so his imagination treats it like a Game of Thrones sequence where he is getting nothing. He's getting the, you know, the pittance of food. And then it cuts over and we're having a feast. And so this was his imagination. So this is the first scene, first day, everything, day one, ABC, everybody's there. And it was complete improv. No lines, no major anything. And the director literally came over into my ear and said, hey, I need you to go to as big and as goofy as possible. And I was like,
About eating
mm-hmm. this food and being this ridiculous.
Like, while you're saying lines?
No. Okay. Like literally just act like it's the greatest moment of your life. So I was like,
oh, great. I have an eating disorder. So this is awesome.
could you imagine if I did that? This is my actor. They barely know. I'm so sorry, but I'm bulimic and I cannot eat this now. Like,
this is a trigger. Thank you. Yes. I don't know about this Blackish show that you have.
The chocolate mousse needs to be removed immediately. No. Instead, I had background actors making out. I was pouring drinks. Like, I just for an hour straight got to be this crazy zany guy. So everybody at the network was like, who's this guy? Like, this is...
That was... Took you an hour to shoot? Well,
sure, yeah. Huge food sequence, huge everything. Let's say it was an hour plus of stopping and going or whatever. But
so Patty, do you have to reset the food every time?
Yeah.
And not then, on all my children.
Not on all my children.
Eat! You're done eating. Next. They're going to be shooting the porn here in a half hour. Let's go, people.
It's so not far from the truth. I mean, it's so real.
Do you know this American Horror Story gets all this credit for having the same characters? Same actors play different characters season after season. It's a clever gimmick, but in soap operas, they do it in one episode.
They do it in one episode.
Everybody's being everybody.
Yeah, you're a twin. And you know what? They had to do it for one day, memorize those age. You're totally right. That's the thing about giving them the credit. Yeah.
Wait, but did you actually have to eat it? Were you chewing and swallowing?
Yeah, which, by the way, oh my God.
Choking hazard.
It is that's the thing. When you watch a show and you watch somebody like take a bite of food, hey, we'll bring up Brad Pitt again. Brad Pitt's character in the Ocean's films eats all the time. Mm-hmm. Think about the continuity of that. Like, you can't have the French fry be this long and you have to like reset. There are people whose job that is to directly pay attention to which hand you ate with, which direction you ate with. So yeah, eating and talking on set is something that is a learned thing. And the first time you take a bite of food, knowing your line is going to come up, like nobody does that. In real life, we could be eating right now having this discussion, but oh my God, when you take a bite of a sandwich and you're like, oh shit. Oh God. And you know, you're like, you get all nervous and you like take a drink of water and you have to do this. You're like, no, I'm sorry, you guys. I didn't make it. Like, you try to time food with line dialogue. It's a whole game.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, that was my first memory. So I did this big scene and I remember the makeup artist. Her name was Nadine. I remember all this so well. She came over to me and when between takes, she was like, they are loving this. I was like,
oh, that's so nice.
I was so excited. So then I didn't have to do that other scene till the next day. So I was way more relaxed.
Oh, wow.
And so that scene was, you know, and they...
And they don't tell... Do you know ahead of time, like, I'm going to be doing the food scene today? I'm going to...
Now, yeah, I do. But back then, I didn't. I mean, that was the
pilot. They called me. I'm just going
to
go.
Yeah. I mean, I just knew I was supposed to... Yes. You do get the breakdown on the whole sheet on the
He shows up hungry. He's like, never again.
Oh, man. That's a big thing, too. Cat food. That's another thing we need to talk about. Food on set. Oh, my God.
I was going to ask you about that because you have one of, it's a smorgasbord, and it's, and you have an eating disorder, as does like most
actors.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're just like, well, I guess I'll just have the carrot.
Yeah. Think about it. What's biggest, one of my biggest triggers in this world is a buffet and free food. And that's what you get every time you're on a television show, a buffet of free food.
How are you managing that?
I needed the season to end this year to really deal with it. And I'm looking forward to see what happens next season with my own situation. Cause I've been now, I've made some big changes. I mean, here I am, you know, talking about years and years of eating. People don't know. Well, on the last podcast, we talked about my eating disorder. On this one, we're bringing it up now.
I think they caught up.
Yeah.
But also listen to Keith and the girl.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So yeah, that's been a big struggle. Huge struggle.
That sucks. And also is great. It's so weird. It's like, I have an abundance of food.
An abundance.
Are you thinking of getting help for it?
I have. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've been doing a program for the last 3 months now called Wild Fit, which has been really helpful. Just like anything in my life, I love being told what to do constantly. I'm one of those people. I just literally tell me what to do. And on this is an app that just I follow every day. A man talks to me and tells me what to do and I do it. That nice. I need. Just no different than I'm one of those actors where if a director's like, they like to skirt around and give you advice on how to do it because they don't want to tell you. I'm like, bah, 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 bah. Just say the line the way you want me to say it, and I will say it like that. Like, I'm one of those actors.
I have this app. Every 15 minutes, it goes, ah. It's like, oh, this is time perfect or what?
It's just your mom's voice, too. Yeah. Ah.
Really?
Do you
really
need that?
Is that what you want to do?
My mom would go, I would reach for food, and she goes, do you need that? And I'm like, no, I don't. But it would drive me crazy.
My mother used to take breaths. So after she found out, you know, it was early 20s that I had an eating disorder, and then I would go home and she would go like this.
Subtle.
So she would take the deep inhale if I took a bite of food that was like, or if I was eating too much, and that would be like, well, I'm stressed is basically what she's telling me. I was like, oh, this is helpful, Ma.
Yeah.
This is helpful.
Me too.
Yeah, this is helping me go eat in the bathroom later.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah. I'm closer to the
toilet.
Once
you go to bed at 9, I'm going to fuck that kitchen up.
Does she know that you have an eating disorder?
Oh, yeah.
That's why she breathes like
that's
that.
That's why she breathes like that, yeah.
That's right.
He affects his mother's breathing.
Yeah. But they don't talk about it. It's like no one talks about it anymore. Because again, that's the thing. Like, you know, my brothers who are much older than me both, you know, dealt with drugs all the time. You talk about it with them about drugs and stuff like that. It's not like my dad, my New England construction worker, fisherman father's like, Jeff boy, how's your bulimia? You know, like that doesn't come up, you know, but the subtle things like my stepmother, I remember right after like in 2003 bought me like all she would buy me is cookbooks. It was sweet.
Oh, okay.
She didn't know to deal with it. So I would get cookbooks from people a lot.
Like, but it was like healthy living.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
How to eat and not gain weight. Cook this and never think about food again.
Yeah, Atkins was huge. People always would buy me like Atkins book and stuff like that.
Best toilet bowls in America.
I do have an obsession with toilet bowls and bidets, by the way. And they must have some tie to it. It's got to.
Did you ever mess up on so bad that you went home just thinking like, oh, man.
In auditions. Absolutely. Yeah. Not on set. I don't think I have a story of like where I really, really tanked it in a show in any way. But I have audition stories where I'm positive there are multiple casting directors out there that are like, no, Jeff Meacham's the worst actor alive. Like,
what happened? Because we just had Gabby Dunn on and she went out for an MTV job where all she had to do was, I believe, read the prompter. And she froze and started crying and left. Yeah. Oh, Gabby.
No.
I know.
On a prompter?
Yeah.
How do you fuck up a prompter?
And well, I said you should have let them see you cry and they'd put you on Big Brother. Don't just run away. They got 100 shows.
Stick it out.
She was just young and new and it was her first, you know, lots of things, you know? Yeah.
I mean, I was in my first, I can tell you two things. My first test, if you guys don't know what a test is, that's where you know, when you've come
you
to
have
the,
a number two pencil and you come in on a Saturday.
Nope. Little off. Network test is where if you're auditioning for a television show or a pilot, you'll go in front of the whole network. You know, once the producers and everybody approve you, the next step is this huge audition called either a studio test or a network test where, you know, if you're going to be on a show for ABC, they got to be there. So everybody's there in the room.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh, are you kidding? Yeah. It is the craziest experience. Like in the sense that you're, again, auditioning for a fake situation already. But in the reality, in the actual shoot of the day, you're going to have sets and another actor. No. This is most likely the casting director sitting in a theater of some kind that they have in their big, you know, at the studios. And there's you know, 50, anywhere between somewhere around 50 suits.
Wow, that's could be a lot
as little as 10 to 20, as many as really high number of people in suits just sitting there watching you, not judging, but it's not, again, like what
they're
I
do. They're not there to laugh.
They're not there to laugh. Yeah. You know, they're not there to be entertained. They're there to see if you're the right pick. They want you to be, but think about that. Think about that stress level. And I can tell you one of my first one ever was for Disney. And they have a television that they keep next to you that they can, that you're being filmed and they can see it.
Oh God.
So you can, so I just was thrown every time I turned to my right, I could see myself acting and they're not watching me. They're watching the screen because they want to see how you look on TV. And I just melted.
What happened?
I just could not remember my line. So I was in my paper a lot and, you know, I'm thinking I'm the only one that they brought in for the test. So I'm right away that I'm just tanking.
And how many times did you ask to start over?
I didn't ever ask to start over, but it was just try to imagine that, like, they knew that I knew these lines and I would just be in my paper saying the lines and the paper, which one of the hardest things for an actor is when your paper shakes because you can't take that away. You can't stop paper has no weight. So if you're nervous and sweaty, you're fucked. And that process can be.
My character likes to move the paper hand to hand.
Yeah. Smart. That was terrible. And I also, and then the big one, I remember I auditioned
You didn't get that part.
I did not get that part. No, I did not. Oh man, that was heartbreaking. And I remember the casting director being like, "Hey man, I know you're nervous, you know, you could just feel, you could feel it." And now I'm much more relaxed.
Does it bother you that of all things, the part went to Michael J. Fox? Isn't that irony? But everybody won, and that's the point.
Keith Malley, ladies and gentlemen.
Keith Malley, who's on I just saw him on Designated Survivor, like a preview for it. Man, he's still acting.
Yeah.
He's still acting. Yeah. He moves a lot, but he acts.
He's always moving and
he's
shaking,
always moving
right?
And Jay-Z. He's got a lot going on.
Well, you're not invited to a party.
Acting.
Was there a second one you said?
Yeah. I remember, I'll never forget my first time auditioning for CSI Miami for my, like, I'm a comedian by heart and I go in for comedies, but every once in a while I'd get those auditions for, like, you know, Freaked Out Dad or something on one of those shows. And this was for,
it's funny, you got that early on.
Yeah.
Like in your 20s, you were dad already.
Yeah.
Did
I really
make
was.
You feel away?
Yeah, I was not. That's why I didn't book a lot in my 20s, because I was too young to play the characters that I was really made for. I was never going to be on this shows our age, but a 90210 or a Melrose Place. Like, I was never cool in my 20s. I was just not. I didn't look it. You know, I am a all American looking guy. And so once I remember I hit like 31, I think, or 32 is right after I turned 30. And I mean, just I'd go in for commercials and I'd get the call and be like, oh, I just booked the dad. Huh. And I just started booking dad roles. Like, I just became,
and you're like,
old
fuck
enough.
It, I'll be a dad. Here
oh,
we go.
Are you kidding?
Playing the role.
I'm doing it right now. I'm playing a stepdad on this Netflix movie. Like, I'll take it. Like, be good at what you're, I had an acting teacher once just say, be the best at what you're good at, and then you can play other things. You know what I mean?
Like you're the handsome 80-year-old now.
Yeah. You can do that. I remember going in for CSI Miami, and it was for, like, Lieutenant. I remember it had a Latino last name, but it was like Rodriguez or something like that. But they were like, all ethnicities can audition for this role. But he was like the cool new cop. And I was just like, listen, Sarge, you can't do that, man. You can't. This is dead serious. Whatever the last line was, it was me and the casting director. And I finished the last line. This is what I did. I was like, so you just take that and you send them home. Thank you so much. Thanks, guys. And I walked out of the room. I mean, I was, as I was saying the lines, and this was at the beginning of, like, I didn't really, you know, I went to acting school.
You're taking your badge off.
Oh, yeah. Just nope. That was the one. And I said thank you and left the room and was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, and this is before I decided to go. See, this is the thing about acting schools. You go to acting school to be good at Chekhov and Shakespeare and Tennessee Williams. No one tells you how to be Lieutenant Rodriguez on CSI Miami. Nobody says that you watch those shows. I will always give credit to any one of those fucking shows. People are always like, oh, man, that guy's not an actor. You try to stand over a dead body and talk about, you know, where we got to look for the next perp. That shit is hard.
Because they're using real dead bodies. These budgets are going and going. Netflix is muscling everyone out.
Yeah. And then remember this too, that somebody's playing the dead body. There's an actor that got hired through Central Casting to play a dead body, you know? And so
and is happy about it.
And it's totally, it's going to make insurance that week. Yeah. And
his mom's going to watch the show.
Right. He got out of the body bag. He thanks the director. The director's like, yeah, okay.
Hey, you never know when you'll be back. That's the big, that's a big statement that you get a lot. You never know.
It could be every week.
Every week.
Yeah. We'll see.
I do. I have buddies, you know, I'm lucky enough to know a lot of good working actors out there, and I watch those shows, and my wife and I will sometimes even laugh at the ridiculousness because they are there. Don't forget, a lot of the procedurals are really, really well-developed soaps because that's what they are. You got it every week. The idea of a Dick Clark show, Dick Wolf show. Wow. A Dick Wolf show is that, again, you can watch just like a soap. You can pick up anywhere. There's, you know, you watch, this is a terrible reference, but like Altered Carbon, which just came out on Netflix. If you watch the middle of that show, you have no idea what's going on. You have no idea what's going on if you watch Stranger Things in the middle. You watch any Dick Wolf show at any point, you know, episode 9,000 of a CSI whatever, you'll know what's going on. You know,
I have to go see my family. We have family dinner every Sunday. Yes, John, we know. Yes. We know that.
We get it.
It's for all three generations. I follow.
And those actors, they do it, man. And I sucked at it. I still think I suck at it. I'm not sure if I could do one of those shows. Maybe.
Well, so now that you're on Black-ish, do you feel settled in like you're an actor? You don't have to worry about getting parts. Like you are a recurring character. Do you get nervous if they're going to re-up? You know, you're going to be in the next season or anything like that?
Every day of my life. All it became is, all I did was just finish that level of the video game, open up the trap, and I went into the next level. It was just harder. It's all it is, you know, because now in the old days, you know, at the beginning, I just wanted to book jobs to make money. Now I decided to buy a house. We had two children. I have this amazing job that pays great money, and it could all go away any moment. I'm not stressed every day of my life. I'm very confident. Today, I get to be on this podcast with you guys. I'm going to an event for Black-ish right after this. And then right after that, I'm going to Sony to go to some event from the Amblin, which is Spielberg's company, invited me to. I'm living a good life, but I'm aware every day that it can all go away. And I know now when I'm up for roles, it's not just me and a couple actors I know. It's me and actors that have been on television shows. So it's like every level is just harder.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks, guys.
It's good to see you after all these decades.
Yeah, let's see something. Speaking of face painting and clowning, can you still draw a flower?
Oh, yeah, which would be better is if you had a water balloon, right. Balloon animals. If my balloon animal work, oh man, I could finagle any kid. They'd be like, I want a monkey. I was like, do you, or do you want a sword?
Yep.
Where you can battle the rest of the kids. They're like, we want a sword. And same with face painting, man. If they were like, paint an octopus. And I was like, or a Harry Potter scar. And they were like, yeah, who likes lightning? And then you just fucking toss out 18 lightning bolts and be like, get out of here, kid.
I just know we have one or two pictures of you from back in the day doing kids parties, and we are going to post it at keithandthegirl.com.
I'll send you some because I just found them in a box the other day. I found all the old ones.
I love you.
Yeah. I found a bunch of them.
That's fun.
Yeah. And I need to start a podcast or something about all the horrible things that have happened at kids' parties that no one talks about.
You know what? Next time you're on Keith and the Girl, we'll focus only on that.
You bring on me and Max, and we will tell you stories. Like, did I ever tell you that Max and I, this is the dumbest shit that you could ever have two 20-year-olds do? This is a game we used to play. I know I've told you guys this before. The game was, I know in this day and age is not an appropriate phrase.
He didn't want a waiter job, but we did kids' parties for a decade.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, I love it.
Way more humiliating. Max and I would try to put the phrase butt sex into a kids' party without anybody noticing. Oh, that's smart.
You're kidding.
Yeah, that's the dumbest phrase. That's so childish of us. It was so inappropriate. And what was, we joked years later, like, oh, what was the goal? It was to not get caught. What if you got caught? You went to prison for saying a horrible phrase at a kid's party. But man, we would do it in some kind of way, you know, oh, you'd fit it in. Hey, everybody, head over to the limbo stick. We're going to butt sex. Hey, we're in the plane. You would like to fit it in and just enough where maybe no one heard it. And we're fucking idiots.
By the way, I'm looking at this flower. I'm glad things are working out for you, actor-wise.
That's a tree. That's a tree.
That's a tree. Oh, yeah. All kids want trees on their face, you know?
Can I have a forest?
All right, know who's going to be the pothead later.
Oh, man. Yeah, right. Totally. Totally. Tell that even that early. All right, kid.
You can follow Jeff Meacham online. Look up Jeff Meacham, M-E-A-C-H-A-M. You'll see things right there.
His Instagram is fantastic.
Just follow me on Instagram. That's where I like to be.
And also, don't forget, if you like this or any episode, please share it, subscribe, and we love you.
And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com.